Good morning. 6.5 minutes past 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn this week. Well, politics make strange bedfellows, and we saw that yesterday. We also have seen, apparently, some fractures in the once united front of the evangelical movement politically in the United States, with Pat Robertson's endorsement of Rudy Giuliani. Meanwhile, other evangelicals have endorsed other candidates, all on the Republican side. That much, at least, hasn't changed. And we're going to talk about that this hour. Here's how you can join the discussion. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear this, except in Australia, I think. 263-1890 if you're in Madison. My guest in the first half hour of our program this morning is Charles W. Dunn. He's the Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning, Professor Dunn.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for taking the time this morning to help us kind of sort through all of this stuff. What was your reaction, first of all, when you found out that Pat Robertson was going to endorse Rudy Giuliani for president?
It came as no surprise. The two of them have a longstanding relationship, a personal relationship. Both of them are prostate cancer survivors. They got to know one another during that ordeal. Both of them are strong supporters of Israel, and they have spent time together in Israel. And thirdly, they get along, as you might say, famously. You know, if you watch them together, they enjoy one another. So this came as no surprise. And I think from the standpoint of timing, obviously the time was right for Rudy Giuliani. He needed to stop the snowball from going downhill as Romney was picking up more and more evangelical endorsements. So this is a major a coup for Giuliani to get the Robertson endorsement. And, of course, from the standpoint of Pat Robertson, the timing is good. That is, it's a win-win situation. He gets a seat at the table for the front-running Republican candidate. So that's how I assess it.
There have been past differences, though, between the two individuals politically. The legal arm of Reverend Robertson's organization once sued the city of New York and Rudy Giuliani for its stand on same-sex domestic partner benefits. There have been other notable differences, and there's been a lot of talk as the campaigns have been covered about Giuliani's more liberal stance on some social issues, such as abortion. How does Pat Robertson justify endorsing Giuliani, given those items in their past?
Well, of course, that personal tie is quite important, and that's what we addressed initially. Secondly, having a seat at the table, the front-running candidate, is quite important. So those two reasons override whatever past legal and political differences they may have had. But in Dr. Robertson's statement, he pointed out that Rudy Giuliani, under the leadership of Ted Olson, the legal advisor to Rudy Giuliani, would name justices and judges to the courts that, I'll just put it straight, are in keeping with Dr. Robertson's views on that matter. He didn't put it quite as directly as I have put it, but that's a clear interpretation of what he had to say. That is, what he said was, hey, I have a comfort zone with Rudy Giuliani personally, and I have a comfort zone with him politically, despite whatever past differences we may have had. And then the idea of a seat at the table, I think Dr. Robertson sees the need of a major evangelical leader having such a seat at the table. To date, no major evangelical leader had agreed to stand for Giuliani, and a couple of them, James Dobson and Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention, of course, Dobson focused on the family, said under no circumstance would they ever support Giuliani. So I think that that gives us an understanding that the past should not necessarily control what he would do in this instance.
I believe there was also an endorsement by a prominent figure in the evangelical community, Mr. Weyrich, of Mitt Romney, was there not?
Yes. Again, that was this week. And that's a part of that snowball that hit esteem, to use another figure of speech, that Romney had going for him. And please note that Romney also has had the endorsement of Jay Sekulow, who heads Dr. Robertson's legal organization, the American Center for Law and Justice. So there's a little bit of division there, shall we say, in the Robertson camp.
Well, there's been some discussion since this came out, and even a little bit before, about the notion that there is a divide within the evangelical wing of the Republican Party. But is it has it ever really been fair to say that that evangelical Christians vote as a block and in lockstep?
No. Indeed, most evangelicals at one time tended to vote Democratic, especially in the South. And it's only been beginning especially in the 70s and then in the 80s with Ronald Reagan that evangelicals moved in earnest, along with conservative Catholics, into the Republican column. But, you know, there is a division within evangelicals, and that fracture among evangelicals is much more pronounced now than it was just a few years ago. We have what's called the emergent church, people like Warren in California and others who are very pro-environmentalist, and they differ significantly on a variety of issues with, say, James Dobson and Richard Land and Pat Robertson. These people have written a number of books. Jim Wallace has written a book called The Soul of Politics, which Democrats such as Hillary Rodham Clinton are very comfortable with the points that these evangelical leaders have made. So evangelicalism is a house divided against itself.
Does that would suggest then that its impact in the coming presidential election will be diminished? That has to be a matter of some concern for evangelical leaders.
It has to be a concern for them. It has to be a concern for the Republican Party. The Republican Party can't win without the overwhelming support of evangelicals. So to the extent that this emerging evangelical movement that is more liberal takes hold, that's going to make it difficult for the Republican Party to win. What the Republican Party needs is someone like Ronald Reagan, who can rally all wings of conservatism, including the religious wing of conservative Catholics and evangelical Christians. Now, I'm not sure who's on the horizon who can do that. The only personality who has a little bit of let's say, the Reagan touch to him is Rudy Giuliani. But, you know, I don't know if you know, the former mayor of New York City can do that. But what we can say about him, one of the reasons he has strong support from evangelicals, rank-and-file evangelicals, not leaders, and that's quite interesting because people like Weyrich and Land and Dobson are not necessarily the chiefs in front of their Indians. Many of their Indians are for Rudy Giuliani. And I think that what we'll see develop here is that Giuliani will begin to get more support from evangelicals to the extent that he does, and we have to bear in mind that a substantial portion of the Republican National Convention makeup consists of conservative Catholics and evangelical Christians. So what we have is a fight here for that delegate vote and a fight to keep them in line in the Republican Party going into the general election.
Let me give the phone numbers and invite people to join our discussion. We're talking about the endorsement yesterday by Dr. Pat Robertson of Rudy Giuliani as the candidate for president that he would like to see get the Republican nomination and become the next president of the United States. Here's how you can join the discussion. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. 800-642-1234. In Madison, we'd appreciate it if you would use 263-1890, 263-1890. So what do you think about this endorsement? Does it mean anything to you? Are you an evangelical Christian? Do you have you been a political participant? Does this concern you? Do you wish that someone else had been endorsed? Who would you like to see carry the evangelical banner in the next election? Those are all questions that we'll talk about this hour. And in the first half of the program today, my guest is Charles W. Dunn, Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University. 800-642-1234 and 263-1890. Those are the phone numbers to call. Is there asking anyone to speak for an entire group, I realize, is on its face a silly thing to do, but talk show hosts do it all the time, and I'm no better than any of them. Is it safe to say that there's a fairly substantial anyone but Hillary feeling in the background of the endorsement of any Republican candidate by an evangelical group?
The best thing that could happen for the Republican Party and conservatives is for the Democrats to nominate Mrs. Clinton. If they do, that will rally conservatives, evangelicals, conservative Catholics under the banner of the Republican Party. And I think that what we see on the Democratic side, and I happen to know Mrs. Clinton, she served as an intern in our office when I was chief of staff to a United States senator many years ago. She's obviously a very able person, very bright, but she's a polarizing figure. And if we look at Democrats, in the polling data, the Democrats are not really happy with any one of their candidates, including Mrs. Clinton. Now, what this may set up is a possibility of somebody like Al Gore to come to the front. There's a lot of sympathy for him because of what happened in the year 2000. So if I'm sitting here looking at a crystal ball, I would want to see whether or not Al Gore would come to the fore as a possible Democratic candidate in light of the difficulties the principal Democrats now are having in getting heartfelt support among rank-and-file Democrats. Now, on the other side, something very important to mention is the stealth candidacy of Mr. Huckabee. And I don't mean stealth negatively here, but in every debate, he has scored superb debating points. He now runs second in the Iowa primary in the polls. He's not put his foot in his mouth one time during this campaign. He's a Southern Baptist, and again, to win the presidency, you've got to have the South. And this is many decades standing. You have to have the South. Carter got the South and won in 76, but then he lost a significant segment of the South 4 years later to Ronald Reagan. So we have to look who can win the South. And Huckabee, being a Southern Baptist, I would have to say to him, he's the stealth candidate. Watch out for him. And I'll tell you a dynamite ticket for the Republican Party. That would be Giuliani and Huckabee. Giuliani, let's look at it geographically. You got the Northeast, the South, and the Sun Belt South. You have an ideological balance. You have a theological balance, a Roman Catholic and a Southern Baptist. It would be essentially a perfectly balanced ticket, and both of them are very comfortable in their skin. One of the reasons they both are getting high marks is that people feel comfortable with them. They're not staged candidates, scripted candidates, like, for example, Mrs. Clinton. So watch out for Huckabee, how well he does in Iowa. If he were to win it or come in second, he's going to have a head of steam going to New Hampshire, and then he would go down to South Carolina, strong Southern Baptist country, where his campaign manager is a fellow by the name of Carroll Campbell Jr. Carroll Campbell Sr., one of the most powerful political figures in that state, former governor, is the one who sponsored Reagan in 1980 there, sponsored George Bush Sr. there, sponsored Bob Dole there, And when George Bush II lost in New Hampshire in 2000, and people thought, uh-oh, Bush may be out of it, Carroll Campbell Sr. sponsored Bush II in South Carolina. The rest is history. Well, it's his son now who is the sponsor of Huckabee. So there's some things here beneath the scenes to watch out for.
We're talking about the endorsement yesterday by Dr. Pat Robertson of Rudy Giuliani for president, what it means to the evangelical community and to the Republican Party, and related topics. You can join our discussion at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take some phone calls and find out what you have to say on this subject. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 23 minutes past 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later today on the Ideas Network. Comedy is a tough business. A stand-up can go through a whole pile of jokes before getting a good laugh. After 2 on Talk of the Nation, where jokes come from, who owns them, and who's ripping them off. That's on Talk of the Nation after 2 o'clock today. No laughing matter this. We've got some serious political news to talk about in this hour of the program, and we said we'd go to the phone, so let's go there. We'll take a call from Sheree in Waupun. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I think that, you know, it's no secret that the religious right has been talking about possibly running a third-party candidate, and because they're fearful that none of the Republican candidates meet their criteria. And I think the one thing that Pat Robertson is doing is trying to unite the evangelical community to go behind Rudy Giuliani. And your speaker made a good point in saying that, you know, they also need the South. So I don't think he's very far off base if he were to say that Huckabee could end up being the vice presidential candidate, which to me is odd because a lot of their base beliefs are so different that it seems almost like there would be a fight in the presidential office because of that. And I want to know his comments on that, whether or not they could effectively run a government if they were to get elected with them having pro-choice and pro-life issues and issues about gay rights and things like that.
You've raised a very important point. Let's address that. First, let's look at the issue of third party. What happens when a third party candidate emerges from within a major party? Usually that's the death knell for the campaign of the major party. And since the Civil War, we've had, I think, 10 such situations, and in all but 2 of those, that has damaged the campaign of the major party. So if a third party comes out of the Republican Party, likelihood is that that would give the Democratic Party the victory a year from now. So if you're an evangelical, you're a conservative Catholic, or you're just a conservative period, you want to maintain some unity within the party so that there does not emerge a third-party candidacy. Moreover, we have to look at another situation. What if the Republican Party were to nominate someone to the extreme right? Well, again, history speaks to this. Whenever a major party nominates someone such as Goldwater in 64 to the right or McGovern in 72 to the left, that party loses overwhelmingly. What this tells us is that we as Americans, we're like a bell-shaped curve. Most of us are in the middle. The center of gravity of power in America is in the middle. It's not to the right. It's not to the left. So for a Republican, you have to tack to the right to get the nomination because the center of gravity of power in the Republican Party is to the right. For a Democrat, you've got to tack to the left to get that nomination. But you got to come back to the center in order to win. Bill Clinton certainly proved that. Ronald Reagan proved that. So the dynamic of this is the magnet of the middle. Rudy Giuliani understands that he has to move to the right in order to get the nomination and probably have somebody like Huckabee as his running mate. But he's got to move back towards the center to win. And, of course, if Mrs. Clinton gets the nomination for the Democrats, she'll have to do the same thing. So it behooves those people who are students of politics, and I have to say that some of these religious leaders on the right are not students of politics. They're good at what they do religiously, but they don't understand what you and I are talking about. Now let's get to your other major point, and that is if you have, let's say, a Giuliani and a Huckabee, that would appear like you have a house divided against itself between the president and the vice president, if assuming they were to win. However, in American politics, again, the magnet of the middle pulls people together, bringing about compromises on important issues. Now, compromise is, in many people's way of thinking, a dirty word. Now, if you compromise on principle, yes, I agree, it's a dirty word. But if you compromise with regard to moving your principles down the field, looking, use the analogy, let's say, of a football game, that's not a dirty word. Compromise is a part of the art of American politics. We've always seen this at work. And let's go back to Ronald Reagan. He picked Mr. Bush 1 as his running mate. And the first Mr. Bush had some very significant disagreements with Ronald Reagan on some key issues, including abortion. But they worked out those differences. So I would say to you, regarding your important question, these differences would be worked out.
Sheree, thanks for the call. Let's take a call next from Rich in Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Joe.
Rich, good morning.
I'm 37 years old, more of a libertarian. I've been listening to talk radio since I was in high school, so I'm sort of a talk radio junkie. And for the last 20-some-odd years, I've been listening to the likes of Rush Limbaugh, Phil Schlafly, all these really conservative, moral majority people saying that gay rights and abortion is destroying the country. How can you be pragmatic about using this hyperbolic language over the last 25 years, and then all of a sudden pragmatism comes through? Aren't they really showing their true colors, that when is more important than anything else? And not that I'm against that or for it, but shouldn't they have been honest over the past 25 years? I mean, if the moral majority is going to elect someone who is pro-life or pro-choice, pro-gay rights, how in heck are these people going to vote for that person when they've been told for the last 25 years that this is why the country is going, you know, to use lack of a better term, hell in a handbasket?
Good question. And I think there's a good answer to it. Again, why would an evangelical or conservative Catholic support Rudy Giuliani? For many of them, maybe most, I'd say most of them, the war on terrorism and having a strong leader against the war on terrorism, that trumps other issues, such as the ones you're raising. It doesn't wipe them out, but insofar as a priority of issues, the issue of national security and having the best possible leader in this war on terrorism. That's why we're seeing them speak out as Dr. Robertson spoke out yesterday.
Thank you very much, Professor Dunn. I know you need to leave us now, and we need to move on and do some other things
this
hour.
May I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
This has been a great interview, and viewers, listeners are interested. My latest book, which received a favorable review in the New York Times on October 7 by Andrew Rauch, The Future of Conservatism. Andrew Rauch, Future of Conservatism, October 7, the book review section, New York Times.
Thank you so much. Charles W. Dunn, Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University. We're going to bring in another guest to join us to help us discuss this issue. Before we do that, I want to give the phone numbers again. 800-642-1234 is a toll-free number. 263-1890 if you're calling us from Madison. And the topic this hour, well, the reason we're having this program this hour is that Pat Robertson endorsed Rudy Giuliani yesterday, and it seemed a rather odd pairing, and that's what we're discussing this morning. We'll bring in another guest for the rest of this hour, Robert Polner, who's editor of America's Mayor, America's President, The Strange Career of Rudy Giuliani. Polner worked in the City Hall press room for Newsday during Giuliani's last 4.5 years as mayor of New York. He joins us by phone. Good morning, Mr. Polner. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
So what was your first reaction when you heard the news yesterday that Pat Robertson had endorsed Rudy Giuliani?
Well, I thought it was good news for Rudy Giuliani. I think any of the Republican candidates for president would have liked to have been in his shoes at that moment, no question about it, not only because of Pat Robertson's prominence and influence, but he's also a media person. He owns Christian Broadcast Television and Radio. On the rare occasion I've heard discussions on those shows traveling around, I think he's been promoting Giuliani for a while, so in a way I'm not that surprised. But on the other hand, it's kind of a double-edged sword for Rudy Giuliani, I think. First off, it shows, I think, that the Christian right political leadership is going to be endorsing different people and is very undecided as a rule about who they want on the Republican side, who they can support. Giuliani is, so that the endorsements from various leaders will be going to various candidates. At the same time, it just struck me immediately that Pat Robertson, after 9/11, which of course is Giuliani's signature issue, some say his only issue, but that after 9/11, he said that Robertson said that permissiveness around abortion and gay homosexuality in America had somehow brought on the attacks on New York and Washington and so forth. And
he and Jerry Falwell both.
He and Jerry Falwell, and for someone like Rudy Giuliani to be associating with Robertson after he said something like that. Remember, Giuliani's kind of signature moment in the campaign so far, I think, was in the early Republican debate when he took on Ron Paul for suggesting that U.S. foreign policy over the years toward Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Middle East had contributed to the conditions that could have led to extremists, Islamic extremists, launching terrorist attack on the United States. So 9/11, and for that, Rudy pounced, right? And he got a lot of attention for that. And, you know, so you compare that with something Robertson said, and now this endorsement, I could see, at least in the general election phase, if Giuliani wins the primary, and he's been the front runner now for quite a while, that could come back to haunt him. That Democrats would say that he was being, pandering and hypocritical, particularly, I think, in an advertisement. So I think it's a double-edged sword for him.
How much influence do you think that Pat Robertson has? It's been suggested that his influence in evangelical circles is waning and that he's lost some credibility. In fact, Connie Mackey of the Evangelical Family Research Council went as far as to say as what support he has left is obviously going to be eroded by this very strange endorsement. Clearly, the Dobson camp doesn't favor Rudy Giuliani.
I think that is it, that Giuliani is picking up an endorsement from someone who is a little bit on the ropes here, not clearly not at the peak of his influence. Although, as I said, given his access to microphones and media, his influence may survive some of the difficulties he's been having and the movement's been having. And again, what I see happening with the voters who are with the Christian conservative voter is maybe a lack of enthusiasm that leads to a low turnout, which benefits Giuliani in the primary, but will not benefit whoever the Republican nominee is, I would say, if that happens during the general election phase, because Republicans are going to need every vote they can get.
Even if the Democratic nominee is Hillary Clinton? It's been suggested that if she is the Democratic nominee, that will get out the vote regardless of who the Republican candidate is, and that people will... the evangelical community will hold its nose and go to the polls and vote for Giuliani because he's not Hillary?
Well, I mean, I've heard that, and I think that, that Hillary does have that kind of galvanizing effect. She's still, there's still maybe not quite as obsessively as it, as in the case of when 2000, when she ran against Giuliani for the New York Senate seat and won. He dropped out in the middle of the race, you may remember. But, you know, there's still quite a good deal of Hillary hate out there, and it will bring out people to the polls. But I've never been convinced that people vote for someone because they want to block someone else. I don't think that's a strong motivator. And if you're not enthusiastic about the candidate who in your party who's running, then I think that the turnout gets depressed. And I don't see much enthusiasm for Rudy Giuliani. The other thing to remember about the the precedent here is the 2000 Hillary Rudy race, which happened 2 years after the Drudge Report broke those rumors about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. Hillary animosity was really at a fever pitch, I think, in the right wing. It did help Giuliani raise a great deal of money, which he's doing now, but he didn't succeed in all the attempts he did to bait voters and bait her in kind of getting her to take the bait. I mean, in other words, in the end, her relentless kind of focus on local issues or issues of concern to voters trumped his repeated efforts to lampoon her or belittle her or dismiss her as a kind of liberal elite or a flower child or words to that effect. Ultimately, it was a serious election, and as is this one, even more so. And I think that a lot of Republicans in New York, and at least in New York State, where there are a lot of Republicans, people just think of New York City, which is heavily Democratic, but a lot of Republicans upstate, for example, in Republican strongholds, didn't end up voting for Rudy Giuliani in that election. So that may be give you a taste for what would come if there was a Hillary-Rudy contest.
Let's go to the phones and take a call from Philip in Menominee. Philip, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to make the point that I do a lot of driving, both on the East Coast and also South, and I've stopped at churches, and I do sales for Watkins, and overwhelmingly it seems like the support is for Ron Paul, and it seems to me like there's some sort of agenda against the rise in support for this man. Our previous guest talked about Huckabee. He's barely raised $1 million in this quarter, and Paul's raised over $4 million in one day the other day, and I think he's going to be able to run a lot of ads in Iowa and also New Hampshire. His support ranges from conservatives to Democrats to independents. Very interesting collection, and the Christian conservatives I talk to can't believe what has happened to this party. And they're all rallying behind Ron Paul and his constitutional position.
His constitutional positions, including eliminating the income tax?
Yes. The Constitution states that no tax can be direct and unapportioned.
Okay. Mr. Polner, care to discuss Ron Paul?
You know, I think Ron Paul does have an appeal. And he is the anti-rec war candidate among the Republicans, I guess if there is one, he's it. And apart from these issues that the gentleman mentioned, such as, you know, eliminating the income tax and such, constitutional issues, there's a great deal of skepticism the polls show, whether you're Republican or Democrat, about the possibilities for this war and this debacle in Iraq and the chances of winning. And there's a great deal of disillusionment, disenchantment with the sitting president and the various promises and he made and rationales he gave for this war. And that is the Republicans are, to the extent they're not talking about it very much other than Ron Paul in the debates, really indicates to me that Iraq is a real powerful undercurrent at least in this primary, in this election, and might account for some of the interest in a long shot. Because let's face it, Ron Paul is a long shot, and long shots have done well and have done surprisingly well in the past in some primaries, but. I think he has to be put in that context as a real dark horse, long shot candidate. Doesn't have the support of the money, on a national level to pull it off.
Given the fact that much of the reporting about the presidential race so far has been the horse race aspect, who's raised the most money, who's made a flub, who's got the lead in the polls, that kind of thing. How much does the average voter at this point actually know about any of the candidates? I would posit, for example, that those Democrats who said they want to support Ron Paul really don't know much more about him than the fact that he's against the war. And in that respect, so is Dennis Kucinich. But they don't perhaps understand that Mr. Paul is a libertarian more than a Republican. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, Rudy Giuliani's case, I wonder if some of his beliefs have really been, there's been a lot of talk about it, but when you talk to people, they know that he seems to be a very patriotic man, and he's a forceful personality, and he's kind of made a lot out of what happened after 9/11. How much do people really know about the candidates at this point?
I think very little. The candidates have been very careful just to sort of try to register or elicit emotions and register a certain a brand. Each one of them has a brand name. Because remember, they're mass retailing to American audience or huge statewide audiences around the country. So they don't want it to get too complex. And so I'm always struck by that, though, by your question. I think is a good one. What do we know about these folks? We could probably find out in a serious conversation over an hour or two and not have to go through all this painful campaigning and having to listen to it and being bombarded on it every time I turn on the computer or the television, but we know precious little. It brings to mind, I think one of the things that was striking about Giuliani in 2000 when he ran against Hillary was that the voters didn't know what he would do if elected or what kind of senator he would be. He never said. When he ran for re-election in 1997 in New York, which he won overwhelmingly, his campaign motto was keep it going. But we didn't really, no one knew what his agenda was for a second term, how he would build on his successes. He just didn't say it. He didn't feel the need to say it. He didn't feel, I guess, that it was politically smart to say it. And I think there's a version of that going on now. I call my book, I subtitle it The Strange Career of Rudy Giuliani, because even by the sort of standards of chutzpah, and kind of realigning that politicians do to stay in the game and flip-flops and all that. I mean, he's really all over the map. So he's speaking to one audience now, a primary audience, and he's trying to essentially register tough and strong. And he'll sound quite different if he should run in the general election, if he wins the primary. But I don't think we know a hell of a lot about these candidates. Or what they would do if elected. And I had an editor when I was at City Hall and when we were covering the mayoral races, which, as you know, in New York can get pretty feisty.
And expensive.
And mean. And, he said to me, listen, everybody else, every other paper is covering the horse race, who's going to win, who's up, who's down. Somebody made a remark that made headlines or someone threw a verbal punch. And we're going to downplay that, and we're just going to do a series of stories about where they have stood on the issues and where they stand on the issues. And then when we get maybe 6 months out from the actual election, we'll jump into that game and do the horse race coverage. And I wish the press in general kind of had the luxury, at least, of doing that from time to time, just stepping back and looking at each candidate, where they've come from, and really getting a chance to ask them where they stand on the issues that are important to them, and give the voters the serious voters, if you will, a better sense of where what they would be like if they were actually president. I have no clue what Rudy Giuliani, I mean, I can guess at it because I covered him, but I can't really tell you from anything he said what kind of president he would be.
Well, if Hillary Clinton is getting hammered right now for seeming to change her position on issues, Rudy Giuliani is eventually going to have to go through that same sort of gauntlet. I haven't seen as much of that yet as I expected, given the amount of backpedaling he's had to do in terms of his positions on various issues. As Professor Dunn pointed out, in the Republican primaries, everybody has to run to the right to get the nomination, and then they move back to the middle for the general election. The Democratic Party seemingly has been the opposite. But this is going to eventually have to be a problem for him as well. I think that's what you're pointing out here.
Yeah, I think he's all over the map. And it's hard for me to discern what he stands for other than winning. In other words, people have to in politics have to have power in order to be effective. So they seek power. But they seek power usually for a cause or they espouse a reason for wanting to have power. Giuliani hasn't, I don't get a strong sense from him that he wants power anything for other than because for himself, for its own sake. So I think he has work to do. I mean, he may say he's the one to keep the United States safe, but he doesn't have any foreign policy experience. He may be the one who would be toughest on terror. But, you know, that's all rhetoric, really, ultimately, which counts in a campaign. But I want to know, and I think voters will want to know, you know, what are you going to do in Iraq, with Iraq? How would you end that horrible situation? What are your social positions? What are your positions vis-a-vis executive power for the President of the United States? Are you going to expand the executive branch, as Bush has done, push it further, or are you going to hire yes men? Are you going to resist oversight and be obsessively secretive as you were as mayor? And what are your tendencies and what are your stances? And these are the hard questions that will come up, I would think, in the general election phase at the very least.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. We've got people waiting, and then when lines open up, you can join too. 800-642-1234 and 263-1890 are the phone numbers. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 9:09. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week on the Ideas Network. Next hour, we're going to talk with three high school students who produced The War Project, a special program airing on the Ideas Network this coming Sunday to coincide with Ken Burns' World War II documentary, The War. That's after 10 o'clock this morning. This hour, we're talking about yesterday's endorsement by Pat Robertson of presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani. We're going to go back to the phones and take a call from Sharon in Duluth. Sharon, thanks for holding.
Hi, thank you. I agree with a lot of what your current guest has said about what we find out about the candidates and how limited it is. But I did call about, I was kind of hoping to talk with the first guest because Pat Robertson is the one that suggested that we, quote-unquote, take out Chavez. And I'm just wondering what kind of... Robertson just seems to be a fairly brash, fairly foolish person who doesn't think before he speaks a lot. But what kind of challenge this can be, maybe even in a humorous way, about Giuliani's bent towards foreign policy if he's hooking up with somebody like Robertson. I think there's a lot to critique in that combination. Again, your first guest would probably have had more.
Well, it's more than just the Chavez comment. Pat Robertson, when the Prime Minister of Israel had the heart attack, he almost said he had it coming. because he was getting too close to the Palestinians. There have been a number of other comments that have been made over the over the years, and you know, so there's no shortage of that. Rudy Giuliani's been criticized for being a little loose of the lip from time to time, gets in trouble for ad-libbing. Mr. Polner, a comment, please.
Well, Rudy Giuliani has, I mean, there's a certain hawkishness that goes along with, as the caller pointed out, with what when Robertson speaks about foreign policy, and but Rudy Giuliani, it's certainly consistent with his appointment of neoconservatives to be on his foreign policy advisory committee for this campaign. Charles, his campaign is foreign policy committee is headed by a guy named Charles Hill, teaches at Yale, who is was a very strong supporter of regime change in Iraq immediately after 9/11, he's also got a guy named Norman Podhoretz, the former editor of Commentary magazine, who has advocated, I think he calls it World War IV, a ongoing war against Islamofascism, I think is his term. And so that's all about Giuliani telegraphing a message that, you know, we're going to do the same thing as Bush is doing vis-a-vis the Middle East and Iraq, only we're going to do it, this time we're going to do it right, or some words to that effect. So, I mean, and as far as Giuliani shooting from the lip, you know, he's a hothead. I mean, New Yorkers know that about him, and he's a grandstander, even a bit of a dictator at times, I think. And those are the qualities that characterize the story of his tenure as mayor. And I don't think he has any problem, you know, cozying up with people who might strike some people as the same.
Let's take a call from Midge in Madison. Midge, good morning.
Hello. I'm really glad that your speaker has finally gotten to this part of the subject. It's interesting about the evangelicals, but the real thing that I've been hearing and I've been reading somewhat what your speaker just said, that most of the Cheney and the neocons have latched onto Giuliani's staff because they believe he is most likely to expand the war into Iran. And I think, as your guest said, that he's actually talking about moving into a fourth world war. And I'm hoping that the American public, when they vote, will know what these people are going to do and decide whether they are willing to risk the future of the world to an explosive war in Iran just because the candidate has more money and has some Christian advisors. Am I incorrect about that, or is that the direction Giuliani seems to be going?
Well, I did sleep a little bit late this morning. I had to rush my daughter to school, but I think, I correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't had World War III.
No, but
I may have missed it.
Some people will say that's what we've got now.
Well, you know, right, I see. But, you know,
I'm only saying I read
what
they're talking about, and they mentioned the same people you do as his advisors.
Sure.
Because he is the most hawkish.
It goes back to this.
People have to decide if they want to ratchet down the war or whether they want to pick it up.
Right, and I think in the Republican primary, the idea here is that if you don't appear tough, if you complicate this matter too much, as I think Ron Paul sought to do in that first debate we talked about, you are in danger of losing more primary voters than you would gain. My hope is that the discussions about the appropriate uses of United States power around the world will be moderated during the general election phase when the voter you're seeking is, particularly if you're a Republican in this case, is different and, you know, more toward the center, and you're also seeking Democratic votes as well, conservative Democratic votes. So it isn't just going to be about ratcheting up people's fear levels or trying to be the most like John Wayne. you know, in order to win, because it has to do with the audiences. I do agree with you, though, that I think that it's out of sync with most Americans now. Again, looking at the polls and the just tremendous disenchantment, public disenchantment with the way things are going in Iraq, and of course skepticism about talk of invading Iran, that that ultimately the candidates are going to have to realign themselves and talk more skeptically about the uses of with more restraint about the possible uses of and I think of U.S. power, and I think of Giuliani, you know, continues with this kind of hawkish, sort of mindless hawkish rhetoric and World War IV and stuff, et cetera, that it isn't going to work particularly well for him.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Polner. Appreciate your time this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
Robert Polner is editor of America's Mayor, America's President, The Strange Career of Rudy Giuliani. And he joined us by phone this morning. Today's broadcast was produced by Rhonda Fanning, with on-air production by Cynthia Schuster and Cheryl Gasser. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn this week, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.